Shalom, and thank you for listening at BethEmmanuel.org. If you enjoy the teachings from Beth Emmanuel, do us a favor and share the links with your friends. Like us on Facebook and tell your friends about the things you are learning at Beth Emmanuel. Help us grow the message.
Prior to the deluge, which brought an end to the ancient world, some strange things had happened. The Torah tells us that a certain band of angels rebelled against Hashem and entered into the world of men, took wives, and fathered children, and that this is one of the things that led to the wickedness that resulted in the flood. In the book of Enoch, they are called the Watchers. Here's the passage from the Torah. Genesis 6 says, "When men began to multiply on the face of the land, and daughters were born to them, the sons of God saw that the daughters of men were beautiful, and they took wives for themselves, whomever they chose. Then the Lord said, 'My spirit shall not strive with man forever, because he also is flesh. Nevertheless, his days shall be 120 years. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days. And also afterward, when the sons of God came in to the daughters of men, and they bore children to them, those were the mighty men who were of old, men of renown.'" The Apostle Peter says some cryptic things about this in reference to the story of Noah's flood. In his second epistle, he makes direct reference to the chaining of the angelic watchers, those angels who are imprisoned until the final judgment. He says in 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 4 and 5, "For if God did not spare angels when they sinned, but cast them into hell, and committed them to pits of darkness, reserved for judgment, and did not spare the ancient world, but preserved Noah, a preacher of righteousness, with seven others, when he brought a flood upon the world of the ungodly," and so forth. We studied this passage in the series I taught you titled Satan in Chains. We know from the close parallel in Jude that the angels which God did not spare but cast into hell and committed them into pits of darkness reserved for judgment, that these angels are those who took human women and corrupted the way of the earth and fathered the Nephilim, as is also explained and made clear in the apocryphal book of Enoch. An even more difficult passage occurs in 1 Peter, where he says essentially the same thing, but this time, it seems to me, he makes reference not to the angels, but to the, well, you'll see what I mean. We'll look in 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 17 and 18. It says, "For it is better to suffer for doing good, if that should be God's will, than for doing evil. For Messiah also suffered once for sins, the righteous for the unrighteous, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but made alive in the spirit." Now, when it says Messiah suffered, this refers to his death. When it says being put to death in the flesh, this means being physically killed. And when he says made alive in the spirit, this refers to his resurrection. So keep that in mind, because the term live in the spirit will come up again in this passage. We'll go on with verse 19. It says, "In which he went and proclaimed to the spirits in prison, because they formerly did not obey when God's patience waited in the days of Noah while the ark was being prepared, in which a few, that is, eight persons, were brought safely through the water." Now, what did that just say? Who are these spirits in prison who formerly did not obey when God's patience waited in the days of Noah? It's puzzling, isn't it? I mean, somehow, Messiah, who has been made alive in the spirit, ends up proclaiming to spirits in prison. Who are these spirits? Well, there's two possible answers. It's possible that these are the angels again, the watchers, who consorted with the daughters of men, as we saw in the almost identical parallel passage in 2 Peter. I mean, it's so close to the passage in 2 Peter that I have always, whenever I've read this, I've always assumed that we're talking about the same thing, that somehow, in some capacity, the Messiah made some post-resurrection proclamation to the angelic watchers in chains as he passed through the heavens at the time of his ascension. That's certainly who we are talking about in 2 Peter. So it seems likely that we're talking about the same thing here as well. That's what I've always thought. But Studying this passage this year during Parshat Noach, I changed my mind. At least as of Parshat Noach, when I was preparing this talk, I felt less certain about that interpretation. But there's an alternative interpretation which has often been suggested. The second reading suggests that these are spirits in prison. These spirits in prison are not the same as the angels, the watchers mentioned in 2 Peter, but rather these are the disembodied souls of those who perished in the flood. Why? Because it says they formerly did not obey when God's patience waited in the days of Noah, which implies not the watchers who sinned with the daughters of men, but the people of Noah's generation who were unpersuaded by the message of Noah while the ark was being prepared. That's what it says, while the ark was being prepared. This, it seems to me, is the correct reading. Not the angels, but the people of Noah's generation. It is the people of Noah's generation, not the angelic beings, who should have heeded the message of the preacher of righteousness and repented of their ways. This interpretation is also in keeping with the thrust of Yeshua's teaching regarding the flood. Our Master Yeshua said nothing about the watchers in his teachings, but when he talked about the flood, he taught about the people of Noah's generation. He taught that the people of Noah's generation ignored Noah's warnings and went on with life as normal. While Noah was building the ark, preaching righteousness, and warning his generation of their impending doom, the people carried on with their own affairs, just as the people did in Noah's day, the Master's generation, and the generation of his return. Ignore the warnings leading up to the big event. Life goes on as normal until catastrophe strikes. Yeshua says they were eating, they were drinking, they were marrying, they were being given in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark and the flood came and destroyed them all. People will remain occupied with their mundane tasks and pleasures until the day of the Lord suddenly overtakes them. That's Yeshua's teaching on the subject. Peter goes on to contrast these spirits in prison with the 8 persons who were brought safely through the water. On the one hand are those who formerly did not obey when God's patience waited in the days of Noah while the ark was being prepared, and on the other hand are those who were brought safely through the water. So just the rhetorical construction of this contrast suggests that we're talking about the people of Noah's generation who drowned in the flood, and not the watchers. In verse 21, he goes on to say, immersion, baptism, which corresponds to this, that is to the ark, now saves you, not as a removal of dirt from the body, but as an appeal to God for a good conscience through the resurrection of Yeshua the Messiah, who has gone into heaven and is at the right hand of God with angels, authorities, and powers having been subjected to him. The angels, authorities, and powers subjected to him are the heavenly beings from which the watchers came, both good and evil heavenly beings. But notice that Peter does not use the word spirits here when describing the angelic beings, nor did he use that word in 2 Peter to describe the watchers. He called them angels. Angels are spirits. It's true. Angels are also spirits. And they are even called spirits in the book of Enoch and in Revelation. So it's still possible that we're talking about angels here. But the book of Enoch, from which Peter seems to be drawing this material, also refers to the spirits of lawless men who are gathered into hollow places where they are imprisoned until the judgment, that is, in Sheol, in Gehenna. So far, I've only given you part of my argument for why here in 1 Peter we are talking about the people who perished in the flood and not the watchers. The clincher for me comes in the next chapter. So if we keep reading in 1 Peter chapter 4, beginning in verse 1, it says, since therefore the Messiah suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves with the same way of thinking, for whoever has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for human passions, but for the will of God. What does it mean when he says, whoever has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin? Well, this connects all the way back to what it said in verse 18 when Peter said Messiah suffered in the flesh. That is, he died in the flesh, physically dying, but was made alive in the spirit, he said. So to the one who has suffered in his flesh, this is someone who has died. Whoever has suffered in the flesh, that is, died, has ceased from sin. That's what Peter says. And he wants us to think of ourselves the same way, as if we have physically died already, even though we haven't. And therefore, we should live the rest of our lives no longer serving our physical desires and our bodies, but rather serving God and doing the will of God, because it's as if we've died. We've suffered in the flesh with the Messiah. So verse 3, he says, "For the time that is past suffices for doing what the Gentiles want to do, living in sensuality, passions, drunkenness, orgies, drinking parties, and lawless idolatry. With respect to this, they are surprised when you do not join them in the same flood of debauchery, and they malign you. But they will give an account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead." Now here is the key verse that forced me to interpret the spirits in 1 Peter 3:19 as the spirits of those who died in the flood, rather than the spiritual beings that consorted with the daughters of men. Listen to this. Here's what it says. "The one who is ready to judge the living and the dead. For this is why the gospel was preached, even to those who are dead. That though judged in the flesh the way people are, they might live in the spirit the way God does." Now back in chapter 3, Peter did not tell us what the risen Messiah proclaimed to the spirits in prison. But here, he clarifies. Here it says, because God is ready to judge the living and the dead, that for this reason, it says, the good news was preached even to those who are dead. That though judged in the flesh the way people are, they might live in the spirit the way God does. That's a potentially explosive verse. So let's just pull the pin on the detonator. But before we do, I want to remind you, this is not my preferred interpretation of the passage. In fact, I have never read 1 Peter this way before. I'm suggesting that Peter is saying that somehow, in some capacity, after his resurrection, the Messiah encounters in the lower heavens or the lower world in Gehenna some prison facility in which the souls of those who perished in the flood are detained. Why are these spirits detained here? Because they are the souls of the wicked from the generation of Noah. The Torah tells us that in the generation of Noah, all flesh had corrupted its way, and the Lord saw how the world was full of violence and robbery, and he was grieved that he had made man, because every inclination of man's heart was only evil. No good inclination, only evil. They were the worst. They were the worst of the worst. And that's why they're in prison. And what is the prison? The prison is Gehenna. And what does the Messiah do? Peter says, he went and proclaimed to the spirits in prison. And what did he proclaim? Peter says, the gospel was preached even to those who are dead. Why? He explains that though judged in the flesh the way people are, they might live in the spirit the way God does. Now, how were they judged in the flesh? Well, that's obvious. They physically perished in the flood. They were drowned. They were drowned in the flood. That's how they were judged in the flesh, the way that people are judged in the flesh. We are judged in the flesh through suffering and death. The wages of sin is death. That's the law of sin and death. But as regards their soul, their spirit, it says that Messiah proclaimed to them and the gospel was preached to them so that they might live in the Spirit the way God does. What do you make of that? There's a principle that says that we can repent only in this lifetime, that you don't get an opportunity to repent in the next lifetime. So what do you make of that? Well, I don't know what it means. But it sounds to me like the generation of the flood received a second chance. Through the power of his victory over death, the one who holds the keys to death in Hades proclaimed the good news to them so that they might live in the Spirit. And I realize this is starting to sound suspiciously close to the old church doctrine of the harrowing of hell. This is probably where it comes from. Maybe it is sort of like that, but not like that. The truth is that we aren't completely sure what Peter means by this. We definitely aren't talking about this is the moment when Jesus let all the Old Testament saints out of hell or out of limbo or something like this. We are talking about the generation of the flood, not Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and David. Did God, in his wisdom, in his compassion, in his abundant and unbounded love, provide a deliverance for the souls, even of those who perished in the flood? It would be absolutely astonishing to say so. And it would be an offense against all the accepted dogmas, for certain. Especially when you consider it's not just a few souls we're talking about here, but the entire world. Does this go into the category of God so loved the world that he sent his only son, even for the generation of the flood? I don't know. I don't know if we dare go that far. I, for one, would hesitate to build any type of theological statement off of a cryptic, difficult-to-understand verse which sounds like it must be some reference to a lost apocalyptic work. But the interpretation does open a world of possibilities. And that world of possibilities is a world I like to refer to as the world of souls. It's the place of the dead. And in that place, the rules are completely different than you expect. And everything you anticipate is turned upside down. This little cryptic passage from 1 Peter illustrates just how little we know about what goes on in the afterlife or what the possibilities are. Is it possible that God is way more merciful than we expect? The truth is that we have scarcely a clue about the world of souls, and yet in religion we carry on like we know all about what happens there. We send people to heaven or hell based on whether or not they agree with our theology. We tell people that their loved ones are in eternal torment unless they believe what we believe. They believed what we believe. We get angry with people who don't have the same view of the afterlife, as if either one of us have ever been there and come back to tell about it. In this series of teachings, however, we are going to make some forays into the world of souls. Through the stories in the Bible and teachings in the Bible, through anecdotes and teachings from rabbinic literature, and through the experiences of those who have actually crossed the threshold and returned. And I hope that in so doing, we too will be transformed. Like Peter says, one who has died no longer sins. Therefore, let's live our remaining days in the body, no longer for human passions, but for the will of God. In the world of souls, the spirit is no longer tethered to the body. It may enter into a place of punishment. It may enter into reward. But in either case, it is satisfied because it has entered into the world of truth. The world of souls is the world of truth. In Greek mythology, there's a river in the afterlife that must be crossed, called the River Styx. A ferryman named Chiron shuttles the souls of the dead across the river, and you need a coin to pay the ferryman. Not for us. Peter says that for us. It's more like the story of Noah's Ark. It's not a ferry on the river. It's an ark on the flood. And those in Messiah are safe inside the ark. Though the whole world may perish around us, we have this hope to cling to. Yeshua of Nazareth has already crossed over, not only in the spirit, but in the flesh. He has passed through the veil that separates this world from the world of souls, and he has returned. So we look to him and trust in him to usher us from this life to the afterlife and ultimately back again. The disciples of Yeshua have no fear of death because not only do we know that we pass into the world of souls, but we know that our Master has gone on before us, and he himself will receive us and take us to him in that place and ultimately summon us back to our bodies with the blast of the shofar.
My yoke and learn from me and find rest for your soul.